Let's talk a little bit about adjuvant therapy. Again, what would you say are the data sets that have come out in the last year? And I wanted to get an update on the ECOG adjuvant trial that you're involved with looking at bevacizumab.
Yeah, I think not a lot of new data coming out. There was some data with an update on the YALT trial that showed, I think it was like 7-year follow-up or something, that the curves were coming a little closer together, but not related to cancer mortality. And so I'm not exactly clear the potential benefit of what that information means. I think it does not diminish the role of adjuvant therapy. And so I think it's pretty well defined that cisplatin-based doublet therapy is the standard, of course, for adjuvant therapy. The confusing aspect, of course, as you know, is the CLGB study with paclitaxel carboplatin in the 1B patients that was initially interpreted as positive and now is only trending positive for survival, although the hazard ratio is the same as just about every other study. And I personally think that it's a positive trial that just unfortunately was closed early and didn't have enough patients on study, designed for 500, closed at 350 patients. So based on all of that, the ECOG study, which is an intergroup study, looks at cisplatin-based chemotherapy with or without a year of bevacizumab. All histologies, because we're not worried about the risk of pulmonary hemorrhage since the tumors are gone, and survival's the endpoint. 1,500 patient study. I think there's only about 250 patients on. The study is not accruing nearly as fast as it should. And in fact, I think in some ways we should all be just a little bit embarrassed about that. I think there's somewhere between 300 to 400 sites that are activated. You're looking at 1,500 patients, and if you think about it, the study should open and close in 3 to 6 months. So that's something that I'd love to see some patients get on that study.
What do you think the reason is for the lack of accrual?
There are some legitimate reasons, and in terms of, and even myself who offer it to patients, there have been some that have turned it down because they were not interested in the potential possibility of a year of having to come back to the clinic every 3 weeks if they were on the bevacizumab arm, which I always find a little bit puzzling. That in the breast cancer world, I don't think people get the same issues, say, regarding Herceptin or another agent that may be given in that fashion. Yet, you know, in lung, we do hear that.
Well, also with bevacizumab, in terms of the NSABP-C08 colon study, which had also a year of bevacizumab in that trial, and they got 2,700 patients on in 2 years.
Well, there's another example to make me feel even worse. But thanks, Neil. And
well, I told you 2 years. I mean, you haven't got to the big issue, which is that you don't include the most common adjuvant chemotherapy given in the United States.
Right. And this study is kind of interesting. So you're right. We do not include paclitaxel carboplatin. We do allow patients with 1B if their tumors are 4 centimeters or greater. But we don't allow the regimen that was used in that study. And then, of course, we're not allowing the regimen of paclitaxel carboplatin and bevacizumab that was the regimen that showed the benefit in survival in metastatic disease. And
right.
So what I always like to joke about is it goes back to the story of the definition of a camel, which, of course, is a horse designed by a committee. And I think that that's sort of ECOG 1505.
Yeah, no, I heard your frustration about it. And yet it's certainly one of the most important trials in all of oncology right now.
Right. The PI, of course, is Heather Wakely at Stanford, and she's doing a great job trying her best to get the word out, and we're trying to do various things. But I really hope anybody out there listening will consider that.
Well, the thing that I saw with the colon study was the docs liked it and the patients liked it because it was offering, you know, something different that they can't get outside of a study that has some hope, something that generally doesn't affect quality of life other than having to come in for the injection. And people kind of looked at in colon, you know, well, what's my residual risk if I do take FOLFOX? And patients who have substantial risk, like a lot of lung cancer patients, were interested in trying something different.
Right. I mean, I think these folks, you know, hopefully are cured, but you're looking at ranges of 30 to 65, 70% cure rates. And that means, you know, 30 to 70% chance of it coming back.
How do you make the decision yourself outside a protocol setting or actually within the ECOG study in terms of which chemo to combine with cis?
I think there's different factors that you can look in terms of the convenience factor. If a patient, you know, wants to try and limit as much as possible the times coming into the clinic, currently the cisplatin docetaxel arm is an every 3-week regimen. given the results of the cisplatin pemetrexed study, there's talk and onward about considering amending the 1505 study and adding cisplatin pemetrexed as one of the arms for the non-squames.
That might help.
So that's another possibility. I think for physicians, it's a comfort zone with whatever regimen that you have. I don't think a lot of the U.S. physicians maybe overly have a lot of experience with the cisplatin vinorelbine, at least not recently. That's not a regimen that's been used here a lot.
So what do you yourself do you usually utilize?
I've used the cisplatin gemcitabine, and we've also used the cisplatin vinorelbine regimen at Vanderbilt as well. But again, I've had some experience with the cisplatin gemcitabine in years past, and so you kind of stick with regimens that you're comfortable with.